the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we discuss spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode number 17, Unity. In today's episode, I hope you'll get a new perspective on the idea of unity. You'll hear a knitting success story. I'm going to be naming names in the political world. I'll have some email messages from some of you, and a really fun surprise ending. Today's spiritual principle is unity. This is a hard one for me. It's taken me a long time to decide what I really want to say to you about unity. The reason is that I find it's really hard to see unity in our world. It's hard to imagine what the world would look like if unity consciousness prevailed. The angel said to me, "Each human being is the result of a genetic line, which is one of the strands that sews the fabric of the cosmos together." I think I've spent too much time thinking that unity is about our genetic lineage, and not enough time thinking about the fact that unity is one of the strands that sews the fabric of the cosmos together. I've thought of unity as what holds human families together, but not really as what holds the cosmos together. I finally realized that I had a concept of what an experience of unity should be, and I wasn't looking at what it is. So let me see if I can release my bias, the idea that unity should mean that we all get along, and instead let's discuss my newest impressions of the principle. My best friend has a favorite saying, "It is what it is." It's a very useful phrase to remind ourselves that we needn't make up stories about our reality. We need to just see it as it is. That's the new attitude I've developed about unity consciousness as I've thought about this podcast. Let me explain. The outer focus of unity is genetic consciousness, that awareness that we are part of a lineage, that interesting DNA aspect of ourselves that makes us look like our parents and siblings, that makes us develop similar habits to our ancestors, that gives us a sense of belonging to a specific heritage. And that experience for most of us is very real. Most of us feel and can see that genetic connection is important in our lives. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean that we get along with or even think in alignment with our families, but the connection is there in our bodies. The other part of that sentence that the angels gave me, the strand that sews the fabric of the cosmos together, is the more intriguing. That little phrase indicates that the entire cosmos is one finely woven fabric and that it is made up of many fibers. Humanity is one of those fibers. The thread of life's expression that has evolved into the human family is one of the strands that interfaces with gazillions of other strands to create cosmic order. Think about when you're looking at a fireworks display. Remember how one of those fabulous explosions all of a sudden bursts out of a completely dark sky and hundreds of colorful little balls spring out of that one invisible core and spread out way, way far from that core to create a huge, what appears to be a sphere made up of many balls of light. And each one of those balls of light has a little trail of color following it. Those balls of light are connected through the darkness that surrounds them. Now, objectively, we know that it's our eyes and our brain connecting these little balls of light and creating the resemblance of a large sphere filled with little balls of light. But still, it's an interesting metaphor to contemplate when you're looking at the universe, that it is the darkness surrounding the little balls of light that actually connects them. This metaphor is a teeny tiny minuscule way of thinking about the original flaring forth to which everything in perceptual reality is inextricably connected. Each of our bodies contains elements which are the direct result of that original blast, And through our DNA, each of us is connected to that origin. That is unity. Lynn McTaggart has published a book called The Bond, and in it she speaks of the space between things as the real connection. She uses quantum physics as her primary argument that non-local objects are still inextricably connected through the invisible energetic bond between them, like the color balls in a firework explosion. She says, in every way, individual things live life attached and bonded to another. The idea of the individual is a fallacy. This concept is another way of looking at the principle of unity. Life expresses itself in an infinite number of ways. It's not the individuals, but rather the expression of the one life force through those individuals that becomes the unity that binds our cosmos together. We need to learn to expand our consciousness from time to time in order to experience this larger perspective. As I said in the beginning, it simply doesn't work to try to understand unity as a principle that makes us all think alike or even agree. But to understand unity as the space between you and me, the space that is large enough to hold your opinion and mine, the space that bonds us, even our uniqueness, even in our appearance of separation, then we begin to understand this principle. Knitting and unity. Have you ever noticed that I can find every spiritual principle in knitting? Well, here's how unity and a sweater work as metaphor. If you look very closely at a piece of knitted fabric, you see that it is nothing more than a single strand of yarn twisted into a complex group of knots. That's unity. The individual knots are each unique, even though they look the same. And the whole collection of individuals make the sweater. Depending on the pattern and the changes that the knitter used in her stitches, some of the knots are more visible or more important looking than others, but every knot is necessary. Every knot has to be secured in the fabric or there's a hole. You'll probably be happy to hear that this month I have a knitting success story to share with you, given that I usually whine or laugh about my terrible knitting disasters. I want to tell you about my Infinite Loop vest. A few months ago, I was in my favorite yarn store, which is Wild Fiber in Santa Monica, California, and I met the most delicious little sprite of a girl, Olga Baraya Kefalian. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Anyway, Olga was there with a trunk show and a new book called Origami Knits, and she had samples of every pattern in the book. I loved them all and immediately started trying to decide which pattern to make first. And then something caught my eye. It was this divine little vest, scarf, long loop of a thing that was knitted with such fine yarn that I thought it was woven. I picked it up and Olga immediately grabbed it out of my hands and started spinning this thing around me in about 100 different ways. I'm not kidding. There are dozens of ways to wear this garment. Well, I not only bought the book, but I bought the pattern for this crazy thing. Of course, I'd picked the one sample on the rack that's not in the book. And I bought 3 spools of Habu Silk Rayon thread. There's no way to call this yarn. It's thread. Like, you could sew a button on with it, which is about the extent of my expertise in sewing. Except Habu threads have a texture to them that makes them kind of sticky and challenging to work with. Although, vis-a-vis my metaphor, the texture in the thread makes every stitch unique. Well, it's the simplest pattern ever, so simple as to be borderline boring. Basically, you cast on 145 stitches, or however many, whatever size your gauge calls for, with a provisional cast on, and then you stockinette stitch for 28 to 30 inches, and then you put in an armhole by binding off a certain amount of stitches on one row, and then casting them back on the second row. And then you stockinette stitch for another 14 to 16 inches, and then you put in another armhole, and then you stockinette stitch for another 30 inches, and then you Kitchener weave the two ends together. You take out that provisional cast on and you put all those stitches on a needle and you stuck in it. You Kitchener weave those two ends together and you have this very, 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 very long loop with armholes in it. So you put your arms through the armholes and then the whole rest of the loop, all that stuff that's the 60 inches of garment that's in front of you, you wrap around your neck or you wrap around here or you throw over there or whatever. It's really, really fun. This garment can be worn in so many ways that Olga actually made a video showing you how to wear it. It's amazing. I'll give you the link to the video in my podcast note. So anyway, I started this thing in May of last year, hoping to have it ready for my family vacation in July. Well, guess what? Little bitty thread knitted on size 3 needles takes a long time. So I had gotten only to the first armhole by the time we left for Italy on our vacation. I took it with me because little bitty thread and little bitty needles don't take up much room in your carry-on bag. And besides, I had hours and hours and hours to knit on this trip. The flight over was long and the many train trips we took from city to city and then the flight back. And I was only about 2/3 of the way finished by the time we got home. Okay, I know I promised a success story, but I do have to tell you this one little snafu. I finished it. I blocked it. I put it on. And it was pretty divine. Almost perfect. But it was just a little too short. When I did some of the twisty-turny things and threw it around my neck and belted it and whatever, it just wasn't quite drapey enough for me because I really like drapey. So I did the thing that makes every knitter cringe in horror. I cut the fabric. And then I very, very carefully picked up all the stitches on both ends and I started knitting again. I added another 12 inches to the already super long loop. And then I grafted the two ends back together again. When I say it, it doesn't sound so horrifically dangerous, but believe me, cutting your knitting is horrific, and picking up 290 itty-bitty stitches with itty-bitty needles without making big fat errors is terrifying. Anyway, I did finally finish it. I'm totally in love with it. I don't know if you do this, but when I buy something new or knit something new for myself, if I really love it, I wear it over and over and over again for weeks until it's totally mine, if you know what I mean. Well, I didn't take this thing off for ages. Finally, I got too cold to wear it because it's really kind of a little summer frock. So I'll put it back on when it warms up again. But what does this have to do with unity, you may ask? The answer to me is obvious. It is completed when the two ends are grafted together. The more perfectly you graft the two ends, the more invisible the seam. With a completely invisible seam, the fabric is one unified whole that can take many, many, many different forms. When you look at a piece like this, you realize that it is actually one long thread woven into a beautiful fabric, grafted together invisibly, that expresses itself in almost infinite ways. Unity. A friend sent me this quote from Eileen. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the book, The Magic of Findhorn. It's a narrative about three people who moved to a desolate trailer park in Scotland in the late 60s, and they developed a magical relationship with the land there. The divas of the land actually spoke to Eileen Caddy and told her how to grow vegetables on this sandy beach around them. No one believed that ground was fertile enough to grow anything, but Eileen and her partners taught us to listen to the land. Eileen is still listening to the divas, and here's what they shared with her recently. It's a great statement about unity and the importance that diversity plays in the principle of unity. My beloveds, always remember you each have your own spiritual work to do in the whole scheme of things. That each one of you can be likened to a particular colored thread of a very intricate pattern, which is being woven. And each one is needed to create that perfect blend of colors. You cannot all be brilliant colors. The quiet, somber ones are needed also. The pale, delicate ones are needed to soften and tone down. Therefore, realize that no matter what your color, what your gifts and qualities, you are each one needed in your rightful place, doing your specific work, so the whole pattern can be perfected. My new infinite loop vest will forever be my statement of unity. Now for the politics of ethical behavior. In this section, I usually talk about what it looks like in your life if the principle du jour is your ethical plumb line. So ordinarily, I would discuss what it would be like if unity were the influence that nudges you every time you make a decision. Today, I'm going rogue, to borrow a Sarah Palin term. I've gotten in touch with my inner maverick, and I'm going to be perspicacious and name names. But first, I want to share this little ditty with you.
You can't write a tune with only one note, because then it's unusually boring. Can't write a song that's only one note long. You'd be a fool to write such a song. The chorus would be dull, not interesting at all. It would sound more like something was broken. No, you can't write a song that's only one note. You can't write a song that ends in the middle of a verse. You can try it if you'd like, but take it from me, you can't write a... No, you can't write a song that's only one note.
Isn't it fabulous? That was the Sockknocker singing one note. And it's true. Unity is not a one-note song, but rather a cacophony of notes that create melody, harmony, and totality. In the case of politics, especially American politics right now, the cacophony sounds a little more like atonal chaos than melody and harmony. We have politicians claiming to want small government and then proposing that women must, by government decree, go through all kinds of ridiculous, unnecessary procedures to use birth control. We have politicians who literally contradict themselves regularly, deny what they've just done, and call the press gotcha media when they point out what they've just done. Indeed, in American politics right now, there seems to be no song, no recognizable tune, no flow of unity. For today's discussion, I want to pick on one politician, as I promised earlier. I'm going to name names. And the name of the day is Michelle Bachmann, or Michelle O'Bachmann, as David Letterman called her. For those of you who are listening to this podcast sometime in the future, you may not know this name. Michelle Bachmann was a right-wing fundamentalist congresswoman who, for a while, tried to run for president on the Republican ticket in the 2012 elections. The reason I'm picking on her is that her sun principle is unity. For those of you who know about her, I wish I could see your surprised look on your face right now when I just said that. I was pretty shocked. Michelle Bachmann is anything but unity, in my opinion. I remember when I first looked up George W. Bush's chart and saw that his sun principle was intelligence. Talk about LOL. So anyway, for my maverick moment today, I want to look at what happens in your life if you deny access or build walls against your own spiritual contract with life. Sometimes people ascribe to belief systems that are actually counter to their own spiritual growth. Of course, it's totally ironic that you would do that, especially if that belief system is religious. Honestly, who wants to fight their own deepest nature? Oh, I'll tell you who. People who believe in original sin, or some other fundamentalist religious tenet that convinces people that the religion knows more than they do about their own veracity. Some people honestly believe that at the core of themselves, they are sinful, broken, evil, horrible souls who can only be saved by a belief system that steers them to do things that are counter to their own authentic beingness. There are many, many, many examples of this. Today, I'm picking on Michelle Bachmann. In the most superficial use of the term, unity, Ms. Bachmann is anything but a unifier. Her rhetoric, her manner, and her personality are not unifying. They are frankly dividing and separatist. But let's not just wallow around in her overt and obvious inability to play well with others. I want to talk about a more serious issue, one that we can point to by speaking of Michelle, but one that each of us needs to look at in our own lives. Michelle Bachmann is afraid, and fear creates confusion. She makes strange statements that are blatantly untrue. Then when she's confronted with the fact, she never says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake." Instead, she makes up new facts. She makes up different history. She changes the way we view the world. Example, remember when she said that the founding fathers, quote, worked tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States. Now, someone subsequently pointed out to her that not only did that not happen, but that most of our founding fathers were indeed slave owners. She then insisted that John Quincy Adams was against slavery. Well, okay, but never mind that John Quincy Adams was 9 when the Declaration of Independence was signed and a teenager when the Constitution was completed, and that even though he may have been opposed to slavery, the actual fight to end slavery didn't happen until 40 years after he was president and almost 20 years after he was dead. And it required an actual constitutional amendment to end slavery. There are dozens of strange things like that that Michelle Bachmann said, which let us know that her mind doesn't work well. I'm not going to rehash them because it's fruitless. She's out of the national picture by now, and so it doesn't really serve us to look back. It is what it is. Let's just suffice it to remember that Bill Maher called her the candidate who appeals to people who find Sarah Palin too intellectual. What's my point here? My point is this. If a person has an internal life that is based on lies, i.e., I am a sinner at my core, that person will not be able to create a healthy plumb line for ethical behavior. That person will be afraid of herself or himself, and therefore confused. That person will not even know when he or she is lying. And when confronted with the lies, that person will be forced to double down and not admit them, because if you admit one lie, you may have to examine all of them, and that could lead all the way to the depths of the soul. We can point to lots of people in the public eye whose lives are centered around this issue, not just fundamentalist religion, but the issue of believing that humans are bad or broken or somehow tragically flawed, and that they must hide from their own inner beingness. Our greatest fear is not the fear of death. It's the fear of self-actualization. It's the fear of truly knowing the self. The point I'm trying to make here is, what about you? Have you stopped to look at your own divinity? Or do you spend your life trying to keep people from seeing some imagined deficiency or weakness? Unity asks us to see each person in his or her perfection. Unity asks us, as I said earlier, to expand our consciousness and understand that we are each uniquely expressing life force in an individual way. But indeed, life is a force that creates an inextricable bond between us. If we spend our lives saying and doing things that separate, divide, reject, and destroy that bond, we're really saying out loud, "Help. I'm confused. I'm frightened. I'm blinded." For each of these podcasts, I've chosen an excerpt from one of the emails I've received to share with you. Here's one from Faith. She said, "I find it very comforting as I listen to each principle and recognize my own behavior, particularly the behaviors that have brought me to the greatest feelings of joy. In this moment, I'm focusing heavily on redirecting and reinventing the thought patterns and behaviors that don't carry such joyous vibrations. I truly appreciate your offer of a new perspective." It's comments like these that remind me that the work I do is not falling into the wind with no recipient. Believe me, I so appreciate these emails because they remind me that each of us has a contribution to make, and mine involves finishing these podcasts. Here's another message from a friend of Renee. Renee gave the invisible garment and a copy of her garment pattern as a gift to this friend, and the friend sent Renee the following message. I want to send you a quick email to let you know how many amazing changes have been happening to me in the last few weeks. The conclusion was God's way of physically slowing me and my mind down in a way I have never experienced before. Since then, I have clarity as to why certain things and people have been put into my life, you included. The chart and book are blowing my mind and taking me to another level I've never known, yet is completely comfortable to me at the same time. I'm very slowly processing the information in order to fully understand it. My dreams are so crystal clear, and I sleep and wake every day completely different. There is so much more to tell you, but I just wanted to give you the tip of the iceberg, which is me now. Thank you for guiding me. I believe you and I have a connection that we understood a bit before, but I fully understand now. Keep those cards and letters coming in, folks. They are my food. As always, thanks to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to visit his website, www.fboo.com. F is in Frank, Boo is in Boo-Boo. The links for the Unity newsletter and for OneNote and for our surprise ending will be in the program notes for this podcast. When you go to turtledreamers.com and click on podcast, you'll see the menu of all of my podcasts so far. On the page that contains the podcast notes, there's an opportunity to make comments. Please use this link. We love the comments and the discussions that evolve from them. Also, on the website homepage, please notice the donation button. If you like these podcasts and would like to help me bear the expense of making them, your donations are mighty appreciated. And while you're at the website, be sure to visit the free dream space and see what we're dreaming into existence this week. Contribute your dreams and thoughts. All my books and products are also available through the website, so click on the store and check it out. Now for the promised special surprise ending. This is Amy Steinberg singing Exactly.
Right, you will see a kiss, for it took a kiss. breath exist, the intersection of my mother's and father's lips, to touch, twist,
perfect what came next, to produce me, as look at me and you will see the breeze.
The breeze it took to shake the leaves, to make my mother's hair move, my father dare touch it and say, please may I have a kiss. Yes, the breeze made me exist. And if you want to get even deeper into this right now, you will look at me and see a big old cloud. That's right, the cloud it took to form the storm, to make the breeze, to shake the leaves, to inspire the lip lock. Yes, a raindrop will pop up out these words. You heard me right. If you look at me close enough, you will see a dark, stormy night. And what is night? Well, night ain't night without its polar opposite of sunlight. So if you watch the way my hands sway, you'll see the light of day. And every day is a testament to the sediment of the earth's cores, ever spinning enormous force. So when you look at me just right, you'll see a spark of the source. But the most fascinating thing about this, and it's true, is that if you look at me just right, you see you. Only what you perceive, how you believe, the space between you and me that creates reality. So when I sing, you can feel it. When I cry, you can heal it. When I speak words, you can be the words I speak by singing with me. Peace, love, free. Peace, love, free. Peace, love, free. Peace, love, free.
How perfect is that song for the principle of unity? Until next time, sweet dreams.